Hi, today is August 1st, 2015. This is Mobile News Podcast number 125. I'm Taro Gasawar, and my good friend John Westfall is not here. He's on a little hiatus on a special assignment, and I don't know what he's doing. But John's not here this week, so once again, I asked some of our mutual friends to join us. And this week, once again, we're joined by my good friends Frank McPherson and Sven Johansson. I was going to say old friends, but Sven's becoming very sensitive about calling people old friends, so I'll pass on that. Okay, so Frank and Sven are here, and today, you know, there's not really that much to talk about, but we are going to talk about one thing. There is a lot to talk about, that's Windows 10 was released a few days ago, July 29th. And before we get started, I want to say that, you know, as someone who has been publicly complaining in ExtremeTech.com and other places about how doggone unstable the Windows 10 Insider Preview was for the last couple of months, really. I would say since, actually more than a couple of months, since last October, it's been really unstable for me. I am pleasantly surprised and somewhat shocked at how Microsoft was able to take what was an unstable mess just a month before release, and it's still got some problems, but it's not like, you know, it's not like destroying productivity kind of problem. So I'm going to declare at least what I'm seeing, and I've installed it on three machines so far, two tablets and a notebook, that Windows 10 has been pretty stable for me. So my question is for Frank and Sven. We'll start alphabetically with Frank. Did you upgrade any devices, and how many and what kind?
Yeah, I upped my Microsoft Surface 3 to Windows 10. Mm-hmm. So that's one of two devices. I have another older HP computer that had Windows 8 on it that is qualified and it's got the bug saying it's ready to be upgraded, but I've been holding off on it
until
I confirm everything works, everything good on this thing.
Yeah. Okay. And Sven, did you upgrade anything?
Well, I had three that were on the preview that I just left that way.
Okay.
Since we got the full thing. I did one for my wife. She decided she wanted to do that on an Asus that had Windows 7 on it. Mm-hmm. And I was really kind of surprised. I stuck a flash drive in it, had the ISO on it, mm-hmm. just mounted the ISO and ran it off that. So it was almost like I mounted, you know, I had Windows 7 with an ISO mounted virtually, and I upgraded with that. Didn't think it would work. Worked great.
Now, it was, or yep. not, was, is her Asus a touch device or non-touch device?
It's not.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Okay, I want to hear more about that pretty soon. So, okay, Frank, I know you said you upgraded Surface 3, obviously touch device. Sven, I'm going to assume that the three you already had on preview were all touch devices. Is that correct?
Yes.
And then your wife's is not a touch
device. It is not. Done.
Wow. Okay, now how is that working out for her? I have not used Windows 8 or 10, I think, on a non-touch device.
I think it's working fine. I mean, I've got Windows 8 on my desktop here, mm-hmm. and that's not a touch device at all.
Oh, really? Wow.
So, you know, I don't think that's bad. I think Windows 10 looks better than 8.
Oh, yeah.
I've got two 24-inch monitors or something like that here, so it looks a little silly when you hit the start screen, but, you know, you don't get that on Windows 10 anymore. It looks pretty
normal.
Decent.
Yeah, I think so, too. Yeah, Windows 8, you know, the way I used to explain it to people is if somebody told me, Todd, okay, we're going to force you to upgrade to Windows 8 on a non-touch PC, or I can poke you in the eye with a sharp stick. Your choice. I would not have an immediate answer to that, you know, two-choice question there.
Well, I'm curious, though, Todd. Specifically, what were the things you had problems with Windows 8?
With Windows 8, in the beginning especially, it's what I call the cueless interface, where you have no idea, or at least maybe you did, Frank, but I had no idea, I should say. I had no idea what the charms were about, how was it supposed to swipe things in, you know, when do you swipe from the right of the screen for charms, when do you swipe from the left of the screen, when do you swipe from the bottom and up and hot corners and all of that, and it was just not discoverable from the sense of an orderly progression of knowledge, like, okay, I can see I should do this. You know, with a menu, for example, you would say, oh, there's a menu on the top of the screen. What does it do? With the Windows 8 Charms especially, there was no cue when you first boot up that it's there. So you would have to know it ahead of time before you do anything. Whereas older versions, and I should say this is not unique to Windows 8. I think iOS 7 has the same problem. I think we're seeing a lot of that in Android. It's just pervasive now, what I call this cueless user interface, where you have no cues to what's supposed to be done next, or anything. You just have this kind of a blank big screen.
I think they got a little bit better when they did 8.1. They started putting those on screen.
Yeah, I agree.
They should have added that to begin with.
With 8.1, they added a few cues that gave you a clue of what at least you might be able to do. Oh, there's something. There's a, you know, some kind of a visual user interface object there. You know, whether it's a hamburger or whatever. Maybe I should touch this or click on it, and it'll do something.
They actually had some flying arrows that, you know, go over here and do this for a while with 8.1 to kind of walk you through it the first couple of times.
Right. And then, of course, there was the lack of the start menu, right? You could argue that other devices don't have a start menu either. iOS, for example, has never had a start menu. It's basically had a start screen with a bunch of icons on it, which is not all that different from the Metro UI. But there's no preconceived notions, but the iOS interface was, in the beginning, you know, 1.0, at least had a lot of cues. Oh, there are icons. Maybe I should touch one. I've got one big button on the bottom of the phone. Maybe I should press that. You know, those kind of cues were there to guide you. Now, that said, like I said, in iOS 7, a lot of that disappeared where, for example, in Safari, it's not obvious how to get the menus back when you first look at it. I know I was confused when I first upgraded to iOS 7. So it's kind of this new cueless design that's driving me batty. And even the power button in Windows 8, which was in settings, I think. So you have to bring up settings and to get to the power button. What was that, Sven?
It was charm settings.
Yeah. So those are the kinds of things that drove me batty. And then just in general, you know, just some things didn't... It just took more clicks to get anywhere, especially since I sat most of the time in a desktop, because there wasn't much in a way of Metro apps to make me move to Metro, which is now called the Modern UI or Windows Store UI or whatever they're calling it now.
Well, see, and that's where you got to the point or why I was asking the question, because in my experience with Windows 8, for what it's worth, you spent most of the time in a desktop anyways. Yeah. And when you're in the desktop, it's like Windows 7. You're working within apps primarily, and the apps function like, you know, you're running the Windows 7 desktop apps in the desktop mode of Windows 8. And for myself, probably 95% of the time, that's where I was at. So all the other stuff really doesn't come into play. Now, I understand, I mean, the charms and discovering things and all that are perfectly valid points. But I think what really happened, to be honest about it, is I think people started getting an attitude very early on that this stuff was crap, and therefore they didn't want to do anything with it. So Windows 10 is important because it kind of changes that. People are willing to give it another try. And obviously, you know, what you just described is first impressions matter. And I think Windows 10 gives people a better first impression because it's more familiar to what they're used to. And therefore, they will keep plugging away at some of the things that are different, like swiping in from the left, right? But it's still there. It's still a task, part of your task switcher, although you can use Alt-Tab and lot of the other common.
I hear you, and I understand the point you're trying to make, and I agree with you this in some respects. However, the problem with Windows 8, and, you know, I don't want to just rail on it much more, because I want to bury that sucker. Bury it, you know, stomp on it, make sure the dirt is tight so it never comes back up like a zombie. But the problem with Windows, one of the other problems with Windows 8 was the distinction between the desktop and the Metro UI was a very perforated one. So, you know, you said you spend most of your time in desktop. Me too. But if I didn't configure things right away, for example, if I click on a JPEG to look at a photo, instead of bringing up, at least, you know, without configuring it, instead of bringing up the traditional, you know, Windows photo viewer or picture viewer, whatever it's called, in a window on the desktop, it would by default go to the Windows 8 photo viewer, which is a full screen thing that was really not a very good photo viewer, and then I'd have to switch back to the desktop. So that, you know, that perforation between that divide between desktop and tablet was very fragile. You know, you tap on things in desktop and all of a sudden you're thrown back to Metro. And that's one of the things that was driving me batty. And also there wasn't a very good task manager, which I think, by the way, in Windows 10, I think the task manager works beautifully. Even if I'm in tablet mode, and I have tested in tablet mode, it just makes a lot of sense compared to that, you know, pulling and dragging from the left stuff, which I could never do quite right in Windows 8. So I think it's more to it than just staying the desktop, which I agree though. And that brings me to, you know, a couple of other questions I have though, before I get on to one of the questions I wanted to ask Frank is, did either of you run into any problems during or after the upgrade? I ran into a couple of problems, but I'll ask you guys what you ran into, if any. Or if it was problem free, that's fine too.
Well, I'll tell you, I spent all day fighting with a laptop.
Uh-oh.
I have a number of things sitting around here. All of them I got reservations on, and the reason I haven't done another one up to now is I haven't gotten one that was all the way through to yes, it's ready to go. Hmm. So I got tired of waiting, and I got a laptop sitting over here. Mm-hmm. I said, I'm just going to upgrade this one. Mm-hmm. And you get, you know, half a dozen ways to do that. And I tried a half a dozen ways to do that.
But now you need a seventh way. Is that what you're saying?
I need a seventh way. I downloaded the ISO. Mm-hmm. And I was going to make a DVD out of it.
Right.
Of course, I had to hunt up a DVD, a writable DVD that was big enough. Couldn't find one. 4.7 is not big enough.
No, it's not.
Nope. I had to go to a double layer. But if you read on it, it says it won't work on double layers. But
oh, great.
That's the only one that worked. I couldn't get the tool maker, the media creator tool. Mm-hmm. I tried to get it to do a couple of USB drives. It would not find the USB drive in my machine. Just wouldn't accept that there was one there.
Wow.
I checked a few places online, and it seems that SanDisks have a problem. It doesn't recognize them.
Mm. Well, and that's like the most popular flash out there.
So I got a nondescript, non-branded USB in it. It found that right away, but it sat there and circled forever and ever and ever, so it never really wrote that. So I couldn't get a USB stick to work. Tried the same thing I did on my wife's, just putting the ISO on the stick. Mm-hmm. That didn't work. And now the laptop is sitting here, and I'm not sure what's wrong with it, but as soon as it boots into something, it feels like it's, or it is, typing P's. It's like the P key is stuck down.
Oh, boy.
So I don't know if that's a software issue or a hardware issue, but I was able. I tried to restore it, and both times I've tried to restore it, it says, "Hey, something went wrong. We couldn't do it. We didn't change anything. Darn." Yeah. So the next one is to get the restore USB that I made when I first got it, and try to get it back to that at least.
Okay, so two comments about that. One. I happened to be listening to the Windows Weekly podcast the other day, and I think Paul Thurrott mentioned a free Flash ISO builder called Rufus.
Yeah,
So I don't know if you want to try that. The second thing about the P key, you know, it's funny you should say that, because one of my three devices is an Asus tablet with a hardware-attachable keyboard. In other words, not Bluetooth. It's physically, you know, detachable with the keyboard. And after the update, I had a problem with the P key. It wouldn't, unlike you, where it kept typing, mine wouldn't type at all.
Oh.
Yeah, it was weird. I eventually fixed it, and I used that in quotes because I'm not sure what I did. But I did a reboot, and I opened up a DOS window to see, you know, if it was the software that was having problems with the P key or you know, it was a physical problem. And I could type the P in the DOS window, but not in, you know, like the browser URL.
I thought maybe some driver or something, because my my touchpad on this laptop was not registering clicks.
Oh, and speaking of,
the mouse worked, but the pointer worked, but the clicks weren't working. So I had to go find a mouse to hook to this thing so I could click buttons.
Yeah, and speaking of touchpads, on my full-size Dell notebook, which is a touchscreen notebook, 15-inch display, my touchpad didn't work after the upgrade, so I went into the device manager, deleted the device driver, not the files, but the definition from the device manager, rebooted, and it re-recognized it and rebuilt the driver or reinstalled the driver, and then I could use the touchpad again. So
that may be my problem. I can't get to the device manager with the keys.
Right.
If you're in the start screen, if you type a key, it'll think you're searching for that. So it's searching for things on the internet and on my PC that are nothing but peas.
Wow.
So. Yeah,
and how about you, Frank? Any problems with your Surface 3?
No, not really at all. The upgrade process went. I followed the process they had set up with the little icon up at the bottom of the screen, and it took about an hour to complete. And pretty went expected. The one thing that was a bit odd is that there were, somewhere in the process when I was checking out, I got a message saying that the microphone in the Surface 3 wasn't a certain type that works well with Cortana. And so it kind of this microphone might not be the best. You might want to go get a different one. But it might work, so go ahead, try. And, I'm actually finding, because I finally figured out how to configure the Hey Cortana thing so it's supposed to recognize whenever I say something. And it's not picking that up automatically. I assume it's supposed to kind of work if kind of like your OK Google Now or that type of thing, mm-hmm. or Hey Siri. But it's not working for me.
Okay, you've just activated everybody's Android, Windows, and iPhones listening to this podcast, right?
All at once. No. That's odd since this is a Microsoft device. You would think that
you would think.
Of all the pieces of hardware in the world, one that would be completely 100% perfect for Windows 10 would be the Surface tablet.
Okay,
so that little piece of it is odd.
Yeah. Okay, so
that's about it.
I ran into the similar warnings on. Awfully surprised when I got those. Hey, maybe your microphone isn't the greatest in the world for my two, relatively low cost tablets. One is sub 300, the other sub 400. But I was really surprised when they told me my relatively new Dell notebook with an array microphone, a microphone array, basically got three mics on the top of the screen, was not good enough. So I think Cortana is just picky as all get out.
Well, I'll say that I got my Dell 11, Venue 11, which works really nice on Continuum, by the way. It picks up the Hey Cortana quite well. So, I have to be right in front of it, but so off to the side, I don't get it very much. But if I'm sitting in front of it, I can say, "Hey, Cortana," and she pops up.
Yeah, I got a couple of odd problems. One was that my touchpad wasn't working on the Dell 15. The other was that immediately after upgrading the full size Dell notebook, I got a UUID, basically user ID error, which is fairly slow system level, saying I had an invalid UUID. To which I simply ignored and rebooted, and then I could log in. Haven't had a problem since, knock on wood, but that was a little annoying. A couple other ones, I got a, Windows 10 only lets you, only lets you associate 10 devices with a single Microsoft, I don't know what it's called anymore, Microsoft Live ID, whatever it's called.
Yeah, call it a Microsoft.
Yeah. So when I activated, my Asus, which was a third device, I got an email from Microsoft saying, "Hey, you have reached your device limit for activating Windows 10, and you can't use the Windows Store." Now, it turns out it looks like I can use the Windows Store on all three devices, so I don't know what's going on, but I'm not anywhere near 10 devices, associated with my Microsoft ID. Now, this leads to another problem specific to reviewers, is that if you're going to be reviewing a lot of devices or hope to review a lot of devices, you're going to hit that 10 limit pretty quickly. So I'm probably going to have to create another Microsoft account. You know, they're free, so it's not, but it's going to be annoying because I'm not going to have all my email and stuff to test when I do testing. And then I don't know what happens when I hit the 10th device or 11th device, I should say, on that, you know, secondary account. How I guess I have to build a third one or something. I don't know. I don't know if Microsoft's going to let us deregister. So let's see. I'm trying to think about any other oddities I ran into, aside from the device limit, the touchpad. Well, no, I think that was pretty much it.
When you mentioned that about a 10, we had an MVP call this week, and I asked about what the limit was, and it is 10. So your 3 is an anomaly of some sort.
Yeah.
But we also asked, because we're mobile guys, does that 10 include desktops and mobile?
Mm.
And they didn't know the answer. Because now if you've got universal apps, the limit is not really how many devices you can have on the account. It's how many devices you can put a store app on. So if
really?
You know, yeah. So, you know, if you, and it used to be, they did something one funny. They did 81 for the Surface and for Windows 8. For 8.1, they said you could put it on 81 devices.
Right, I remember that.
But it was really, you know, 10 devices. But they didn't know the answer on whether or not that included. Because right now I've got essentially the same Office modern apps on a tablet and a phone.
Mm-hmm.
So
does
that
phone count
across both styles of device? And they didn't.
Yeah.
They didn't know. But I mean,
wow.
But that's an interesting question.
Yeah. Especially since I hit it at 3.
Yeah. that should not have happened unless you get a bunch of them hanging around floating somewhere.
No. And, you know, and I have a couple more devices. I mean, personal boxes that I want to upgrade to 10. There's at least 2 or 3 I want to upgrade. So, you know, I'm going to be hitting 6 pretty soon.
Yeah.
Well, anywho. That's probably a very... you know, reviewer-centric kind of problems. And these aren't even review units. These are all, you know, boxes I bought.
Yeah.
But I have, you know, like you, Sven, you probably have a lot of stuff lying around in Frank, you know, but, you know, that you are thinking about upgrading at least.
Phones, I got tons of phones, and I've hit that limit regularly on phones that, hey, you can't put this app on this phone, you ran out of...
right. And I've run into that with the Kindle, by the way. You know what, I think you can only have a book, and it's not the Kindle app, but I think you can only download a book to 5 times or something. And there's one book that I've never finished in the last like 10 years, or however long the Kindle's been around. And I remember trying to download it on a test device to read, you know, because I always read that one as my test book. And it says, oh, you can't download it anymore. So I can't find the other 5 devices it was on, so I don't think I can read it anymore. But that's kind of a problem. Oh, and speaking of universal apps and stuff. Oh, I'm sorry, Frank, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I have, I guess, 2 other little nagging, so one issue that still persists. And that's the Surface Pen and the button on the top. I'm working with OneNote. There is a, you know, the as you may know, the software I think comes with OneNote Touch automatically. And that is the default configuration for the button. In other words, if you click the button, the OneNote Touch app starts. If you double click it, it does a screen capture and puts it into OneNote Touch. I have the full desktop version of OneNote installed and in Windows 8 and supposed to be in Windows 10 as well. You can configure the button to start the OneNote desktop app as opposed to the Touch app. And I had that working. When I first got this tablet, there was a problem where it didn't work, and as directed through Microsoft on a website to basically do an update Windows 8 right away, apply that problem, and then with the configuration, there's actually an app, you can configure it. It stuck and it worked with OneNote desktop. Since I'd done the upgrade to Windows 10, that seems to have all gone away. It's still now it's only working with OneNote Touch, and no matter what I try to do with the configuration, it stays on that. So hopefully Microsoft, that it is actually a bug that they'll get in a future release. It's kind of a minor annoyance for right now for me. The other problem I had is when I, after the upgrade, one of the first things I tried was the new mail and the new calendar apps. Mm-hmm. And when I first tried them, I'd see the app try to start up, and then it would immediately shut down.
Yeah, I saw that
whether
too.
It was mail or calendar.
Right.
And what I did is I just rebooted the machine. I fiddled with it a bit. And, well, what the heck? Let's do a restart, see what happens. After the restart, the problem went away. Now, what I did notice, and I wanted to ask you guys, is I had my mail and calendar configured for an Exchange account with my work. Mm-hmm. And since I've gone back in, I've had to reconfigure all my accounts. The Exchange accounts are not working at all. Do either of you guys have use mail with the mail app with Exchange and have it working? Because it could either be the way my company is set up, you know, where it's looking for Windows 8 and approved it, not Windows 10. Or it could be that there's an issue with the Exchange, and that since I had that, that was the original problem with the shutdown.
I only use it with IMAP 4 accounts. Fran, how about you?
I have an Office 365, which is an Exchange account. I got that loaded up on the Dell over here, got it working just fine. I cannot get the mail account on the Windows phone to attach that. It tells me that I don't have the security set right on my phone. Even though I'm the administrator, I set it and I know what it's set for. The mail on the phone will not connect to my Office 365 business account.
Right, you know. Which is like Exchange Cloud Server or something or whatever.
So, yeah. But on Windows 10 on the Dell Venue, I did it this afternoon to make sure it worked.
Interesting.
It did prompt me to say that we're going to configure this thing so that you have all the right security based on your business.
Yeah. I really strongly suspect it has to do with my company's security policy. It's probably an Active Directory setting there where it says, okay, you're approved for the Windows 8 mail calendar apps. And it's probably now, you know, doesn't recognize it because it is a different app, right? It looks different. It functions slightly differently. So I would venture it's reporting back to Exchange Server as a Windows 10 version, and that's what it's looking for.
Hmm. Yeah. Microsoft hasn't quite got its act together on this on versioning for Windows 10. In fact, doggone, I can't remember it. You know, there was a Microsoft site I went to check something, and I remember it. I got a warning message. You know, so I was in Edge browser, right under Windows 10. It said this site works best with IE 11, and I go, okay, that's fine. But shouldn't you also work with Edge, which you just released? You know, so. Yeah. I should have written it down because that was quite annoying. Now, Frank, I know. I was going to ask you guys before I ask Frank his question, or a question I have for him is: are there any? You know, we were talking about none. Frank, you spend the vast majority of your time in desktop. Me too. But I'm going to guess Sven at least divides his time between Metro and the desktop. And are there any interesting universal apps, modern UI, you know, whatever you want to call it, that you guys have seen? I can't say I've seen any. I did see iHeartRadio and some game appear magically on my Windows 10 devices. I can't remember which one, though. And I'm on my Mac right now, so I can't check.
You can't check. I don't use them as much on my desktop. But, you know, I have smaller devices on the Surface. I use modern apps. I have no problems with the PDF readers and things like that and the Kindle type
stuff.
But,
I mean, is there anything that you would recommend people install on there?
Actually, if you order a lot of stuff from Amazon, and you guys can't see me anyway. There's an app called Package Tracker that, let me give you the name. It's iTecture Consulting. Okay. iTecture.consulting, but it's called Package Tracker, and I wanted to give the name of the company because there's probably 100 things that come up if you say Package Tracker. This thing there's a modern version for the desktop and for phone. I'm not sure it's universal, but that looks very similar on both, and they're connected. So
say the name of the company again for Package Tracker.
iTecture.
Can you spell that again?
as soon as I, let me bring it back up.
Okay. I'm just putting it in our show notes.
Okay. Yeah, I have to do the funny, you know, find the charms. the ITECTURE dot okay. consulting.
Dot consulting. Got it. Okay.
FedEx, UPS, China Post, USPS. There's a god awful long list of things that it does. But if you want to track packages, you tell it who's got it and what the number is, and this thing gives you a complete, tracking, and pops it up in your notifications and all that kind of stuff. So it lets you know when things are coming. And if you put it in one of your devices, you've put it in all. So I can sit here and get a mail on my desktop and pop that tracking number in on the desktop, and it'll be in my phone, and I can,
Right. One thing I've noticed, but I do happen to have a package somewhere between me and I don't know where it's being delivered from, coming here, and it's coming via, U.S. Postal Service, sent by Amazon. And I noticed Cortana's been tracking it. I'm not sure how it's tracking it, because that email is going to Gmail, not to Hotmail. So I'm not sure where it's getting the data from, but it's, unless I have the Amazon app installed on it, which might be getting it there. But anyway, Cortana's been telling me, hey, your package is like here, or, not here physically, but here in its course of getting here, and it's kind of halfway done through its delivery cycle. So it's Cortana somehow knows. Where my Amazon package is, at least.
Yeah, Gmail in your mail app?
No, I don't. I don't.
So you just do it on the web?
Yeah, I just use Gmail on the web on my Windows 10 box. And I believe, have my an Amazon app installed on one of the Windows 10 boxes. So maybe it's getting that data from there. But, that said, I have installed uninstalled a couple Metro apps. Like Skype for Metro is so bad that I uninstalled it. And I think Microsoft did away with it anyway.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they got rid of it.
Yeah, they agreed with me. And I think Netflix, which I'm addicted to, Netflix app was so bad I installed that too, so I didn't accidentally launch it. So there are a couple that I would recommend against. But I don't have anything I recommend for. How about you, Frank?
Well, the one app, yes, again, more work-related that I use the most is an app called Task Angel, which is a to-do task management application. And the main reason why I got it is that it works with To-Do as the back end, which is, it's kind of like if you're not familiar with To-Do, it's a web-based task application. But the big advantage that it has is it has a pretty well-known API, and there are a ton of third-party applications ranging, for Android, iOS, Windows, that interface with it and use it as a data store. So that provides a lot of flexibility. And I stumbled upon that, the Task Angel app, and said, I found that this setup is really useful, kind of aligns to how I think of things. So I've been happy with that and use that quite often. I use the Solitaire app, which is actually, I think, part of the Xbox stuff for that. But, hey, I, occasionally like to play Solitaire, and it's, a decent app. I know people complained, I think, about somebody advertising it and so forth, but it doesn't interrupt my gameplay.
Yeah, you have to pay $10 a year to get rid of that. Yeah, don't you have to pay $10 a year to get rid of the advertising in Solitaire now?
I believe that's the case, yeah. So there's a payment of it. There's a Twit app that I use to watch the Twit broadcasts.
Uh-huh.
I use that quite often, and that's a modern UI app. And it works I find it works very well. So I'm using that almost every day at lunch to watch one Twit video broadcast or another. And the MLB TV app, which is the baseball, Major League Baseball app, seems to work pretty well too. So, yeah, I've got a couple of video apps that work, some work-related to task management. apps, and just a small handful. But aside from the things that come with software, MSN apps.
Yeah, and as I said, I can't think of anything I would recommend offhand in modern UI. That said, now that the modern UI apps are no longer, giant tiles on my screen, and I can actually have, overlapping windows on the desktop, I would probably be more likely to look at some of them. But generally speaking, I don't use the Facebook app, I don't use the Twitter app, the Metro ones. I just go to the web. They just seem to work better that way. And quite frankly, it saves me a couple of megabytes per app.
The ones that I lean towards are the ones that there is a Windows Phone one and a modern one for the desktop, and they share. That there's somewhere in the background that they talk to each other. Xbox Music or now Groove, I will use that on the desktop because it has all my stuff in it.
Oh, I see.
The other option is go to the web and do it. So,
yeah.
So there's
For music, I use Google All Access Music, so it's all web. I don't have a choice.
Yeah.
But I think Sven, you're touching on something that I think is going to be important for Microsoft, right? Which is how the universal apps are supposed to work and how useful they actually really are. Right. I mean, if it can get to a point where you get software developers that really make good apps that work well on both a phone and a tablet and a desktop, which is the true vision of the universal apps, and there's value in that, the users see that, then that's going to help Microsoft move towards this store-based ecosystem, because that's really at the end of the day what they after, right? I mean, the desktop apps, most people say, hey, the desktop apps work fine. You do what I need. What's the big deal? The big deal for Microsoft is they want to get everybody, all this software into the store, in the store central place that maybe down the road they can monetize, but at the very least be able to control what's going out to the devices. And in order for that to realize its vision, you got to get the majority of the apps that people use in the store. Yeah. Today, that's not the case because everybody, if they get desktop apps, you're getting it straight from a developer website or some other store, say like Amazon or something like that. It's not the Microsoft software store.
Right. Almost everything is sideloaded, as the phone people would say.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, touching on something that I read in Frank's Windows 10 notes on the web. Frank, is that a public blog you have on Frank McPherson? I'm going to just say it out loud.
The notes that you referred to, the URL is notes.frankmcpherson.net.
So I was reading it, and you had some questions about the nature of Continuum for Windows 10. I thought I wanted to jump on that because I'm not quite sure what to make of it either. So my take on it, and you guys, especially you, Sven, you probably know more about this than I do. Continuum for Windows 10, to me, sounds like a kind of responsive design where if you have a physical keyboard attached to your computer, it's supposed to go into kind of like a desktop mode mostly, and give you more of a desktop experience. But if you do not have a physical keyboard attached somehow, it's supposed to give you a more of a tablet experience. And Windows 10 has that button in the configuration on the right that lets you do that manually, but it's supposed to do it automatically. And I'll be honest, even though I have two tablets, they always have keyboards on them. I've never used them in tablet only, more rarely, except for, testing something just to see if it works. So I kind of see it as, like I said, a responsive design thing. But I think Frank's kind of not seeing that on his Surface, which has a physically detachable and attachable keyboard.
I have a question for Frank. It works great on my Venue 11. It's got a keyboard with a button, and you push the button and the keyboard comes off, and I've got it configured to do it by itself. You have the option of just do it when you think it's right, ask me every time, or don't ever. I've got it configured to do it by itself, and it seems to do it pretty well. But I think Frank was saying, if you've got a Bluetooth keyboard, when you turn that off, it doesn't know that you turned that off, and it doesn't go back to tablet as you would think it would. What happens, Frank, if you flip your Surface keyboard around the back? Does it go?
You know, I haven't tried that, but let me clarify what, or make sure, you know, I understand what, you know, people understand what I'm seeing. My question is, the first of all, the type cover that comes with the Surface Continuum works as expected with that. And by that, I mean, if I detach the tablet from the keyboard, it switches automatically to tablet mode. And if I reattach it, it switches automatically to desktop mode. That's the way I understand Continuum is supposed to work. The question that I have, or what I expected, is if I were to take the Surface tablet, and instead of using the type cover, attach it to a Bluetooth keyboard, like my Logitech K480, what is supposed to happen? I expect that it would detect it has a keyboard attached and switch into desktop mode automatically, but it doesn't do that. So it looks to me like right now Windows 10 may work with physically attached keyboards, because the keyboard is magnetically attached to it. And Todd, I think you have a laptop that actually has a physical keyboard that you drop it in and out, and it'll probably work for that. But it doesn't look like it works for any type of Bluetooth devices, which, if that's by design, I think that's a flaw, or it's just not fully baked yet.
Okay, so
I would wonder, though, if you have a Bluetooth keyboard and mouse, what would you expect it to do if you turn off the mouse or turn off the keyboard, but not both? I'm not sure what you'd expect or what.
I would expect the keyboard to be the main driver, not the mouse.
Think so? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I would expect, just kind of naively.
Yeah, or the opposite, actually. If you think about it this way, if I attached a mouse to a device, that would seem to be the surest sign that I don't want a touch screen. I'm going to use a mouse. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that should be almost automatic. But what I would recommend to Microsoft, what they ought to do if I was designing it, is to copy the trusted device model in Android. Okay, Android has this, you know, in Lollipop, has this concept that if I connect a Bluetooth device to it, and it's a trusted device like my Android Watch, I can bypass the lock screen and get into the device. And what happens with that mode enabled is every time I connect a new Bluetooth device to my Android phone or a tablet, it pops up and says, I see you've got a new Bluetooth device connected. Do you want to treat this as a trusted device, yes or no? If I say yes, it's trusted. It unlocks. If I say no, it doesn't. You would think, I would expect Windows 10 Continuum to work the same way. If I add a new Bluetooth keyboard at the time it does it, ask me, do I want to use it in desktop mode or tablet mode? And then it knows what to do automatically.
Okay, so
same thing with the mouse.
Okay, so I'm going to bring this up a little later when we talk briefly about Office Mobile, which is coming up soon. That's next up in my list of things I wanted to ask you guys about. But I just walked over and grabbed my Asus 10, which is T100, which is 10.1-inch hybrid device. It's a tablet that has a physically detachable, attachable keyboard. And I went over, and it was, you know, it's attached, so I unfolded it in notebook mode. It was in desktop mode fine. I detached the screen from the keyboard, and it still stayed in desktop mode. It never switched to tablet mode. So Continuum did not recognize this as a hybrid device that was switching modes from, you know, sort of desktop to tablet. So it doesn't work on this, but I'll tell you why in a minute. I'm not too surprised.
There is a three position switch, software switch, where it may for some reason have decided to never ask. And you have to use the tablet button. But there should be some place that I don't know how to
look for it.
That you have those three options.
Yeah, you know,
ask me every time, or, you know, or never.
Speaking of tablets, you know, since Frank, Surface 3 is a tablet, and you've got a couple, Sven, when you upgraded your device to Windows 10, did it set lock orientation when you first booted into Windows 10? Mine did.
I think
on every device.
my Venue Pro did, and that irritates the crap out of me because I normally have it sitting in landscape, yeah, and it assumes I want it in tablet, so it always comes up in tablet, you know, so I have to turn sideways to put my pin in. And
yeah, mine was exact opposite. My two tablets both came locked in landscape orientation.
All right.
Yeah.
So they were consistent, at least.
So it looks like on the Surface 3 that if you have the type cover attached to it, the orientation lock screen is actually grayed out. You can't use it. But when I know that's not the case when I do not have the keyboard attached, because I have used that already, lock and unlock.
Yeah, I think it'd be interesting because when you fold the keyboard all the way behind that Surface, it believes it's a tablet. Now, I bet you it unlocks if you do that.
Okay, so I just opened up my Asus, which has a physical keyboard on it, and the rotation lock was on. It's not grayed out. So I can defeat it or turn it on. But I leave it on because I'm always in landscape mode anyway.
And Sven, you're absolutely right. When you fold the keyboard back behind the tablet, it automatically switches to tablet mode.
Cool. Okay. Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah. Okay, so next up, really the last thing on my list.
One last piece of it that I want is on the Venue 11, I also have a dock. And what I really want to find out, and I don't have one handy, is a Logitech keyboard that uses their proprietary connector,
mm-hmm,
not Bluetooth. I would think that if I have that on the dock and then remove the tablet from the dock, it will lose connection with the keyboard and mouse.
Hmm.
And I'll find that out and let you guys know what that does. Because that's almost like removing a keyboard and mouse. With the Bluetooth, I think that's a little touchier.
Yeah,
you
know, I got to go check my Venue 8 because I have a Bluetooth keyboard on that I use 100% of the time.
But I wonder, you know, if you have a Logitech one with the combined little dongle they use, if you pulled that out, would it believe you detached a keyboard?
Yeah.
Actually detached one.
Right. Okay, and the last item on my two-item topic list is Office Mobile, which confused the heck out of me when it was announced, and it's still confusing me. So let me try to kind of say what I understand about it, and you guys can tell me what's going on. And then I have even more confusing things about it to talk to you about. So Microsoft has three versions of Office, sort of, for the Windows line, if you will. There's the full Office, which is normally Office 365 or Office 2013, 2016, that sort of thing, which is what most of us think of as Office. Then there's Microsoft Office Online, which is their browser-only version, which is kind of like a very weak, you know, subset feature-wise of the full desktop, but, you know, it can still, you know, create titles and that sort of thing. And it's free. And then in between, there is something called Office Mobile, which runs on everything, across from phones up to desktops. And it is kind of sort of free. It is free to download, regardless of what platform it is, but if you have, and according to Microsoft, a device that's 10.1 inches, has a display that's larger than 10.1 inches, you have to have Office 365 to use it. However, if you have a device that is 10.1 inches or less display, you can edit on it for free, but extra features like review mode in Word and some pivot table kind of things in Excel, and I think reviewer notes and PowerPoint, you need to have a subscription to Office 365. Okay, so that's my understanding. And quite frankly, I think that's reasonably clear. I think I'm okay with that, you know, what you can get for free and what you got to get in Office 365. But here's what drove me nuts. So one of the first thing I did was download Office Mobile Word, Excel, and PowerPoint on my 10.1 inch Asus tablet, and when I try to edit, it tells me I need the Office 365 license. I went back to look at the link that Microsoft provides to explain it, and it clearly says 10.1 inches or less, not, you know, less than 10.1 inches. So I went on a web chat with a Microsoft support person for Office, and that she told me, in no uncertain terms, there is no free version that allows editing, which is clearly wrong, because I also installed it on my 8-inch Dell Venue 8 Pro, and I can edit there. I don't have the features that you like, review mode that you need to pay in Office, but I can edit a document, I can create a document. So this tech person is clearly wrong on all counts, is in terms of not having any free version that could edit. Have you guys tried Office, any of the Office mobile apps, aside from one? I know Frank's tried OneNote. And have you found if you can edit on a 10.1-inch device? Because I can't.
I can edit on my Surface 3. However, I should point out, I may be an exception. I have an Office 365 account or subscription with this tablet, because that was something made for free for the first year when you buy the tablet. So that may be. But you know, what you describe, isn't there this thing what Microsoft has where for the small tablets it's providing Windows for free, and there's a cutoff, and I thought it was at the 10-inch mark, really, you know, or even smaller. There they started to charge the manufacturers for the operating system. It sounds like what you're describing is almost a similar model, where they're going to give Office for free to the smaller tablets, Windows tablets, and not for the larger ones.
I agree.
Which is kind of, and that's shooting themselves in the foot, though, because can't you get the full Office mobile for that you're talking about for iOS devices, which are larger screen? I've got it on my Android tablet, and it's the full mode. I can review and do edit documents and everything on my tablet, on my Android Nexus 9.
Yeah, and actually on iOS, you can also do that. You do, however, need to get an iOS in the iPad. Word for iPad, for example, you can edit for free, but you do need an Office 365 account if you want to turn on review mode, for example, which is very handy if you work in a business setting where you need to work with multiple people on a single document. So that's relatively consistent, and you know, the current iPads are all under 10 inches large. Oh. So, but I'm reading, so on products.office.com, I'm reading now, it's the first sentence, extra features with your Windows tablet with Office 365. Core editing is available for free on Windows devices with screen sizes of 10.1 inches or less. So it doesn't say, you know, like 10.1. In other words, if you have 10.1, you're above the limit. It's 10.1 inches or less. So it's supposed to work on everything. Now, it won't work on the Venue 11, because you know, that's greater than 10.1. But it should work on my Asus, which is 10.1. I don't know. I think maybe it's kind of related to that, you know, I've reached my device limit for Windows 10 when I hit my third PC.
I need to correct something I just said. On my Nexus 9, I guess I've never tried to set into the review and try to track changes, and lo and behold, it's saying it's an Office 365 feature, and I need to get a subscription. So
that is consistent.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I can't help Office 365, and that's the account I'm using most everything, so I'd get everything you could.
Okay. So you wouldn't see that, yeah.
I wouldn't see it. The thing that it bugs me is they did have that strange 7.99 inches and down got Office Mobile, and 8 inches and up was available, you know, for the full version of Windows 10. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know what they're doing. Well, I sort of do know what they're doing for things like the HP Stream 7 that had a full version of Windows on it, and Don Sorcinelli has Windows 10 on it now, you know, so I don't know if that's going to be a small tablet or a full-size tablet or what the heck that thing is now.
Yeah. I should also note that I...
some things, if how it knows how big the thing is, how is that reported? Do they have a database that's got everything in it, or should the tablet itself report, you know?
Yeah, and I don't know the answer to it, but whatever it is, it's not working for mine.
Centimeters, and it thinks it's really big or something like that.
You know, one of the things I was going to mention is that I published an article on extremetech.com yesterday. I should say they published it for me about this whole Office Mobile. And my summary statement is basically, whatever it does, it's really not worth it. Because if you need to do things of any significance, you're going to need a full Office package for your computer. And, you know, these little tablets, these little so-called underpowered tablets, well, I guess I don't call it that, but some people I've heard say it's underpowered. Oh, in fact, I think the Windows Weekly, I think Paul Theriault was saying those, you know, cheap underpowered tablets or something like that. When somebody was asking, no, it wasn't tablets, older computers were underpowered. But one of the things I found is that Windows 10 actually runs pretty sprightly on my, you know, low-end Atom-type processors, on the Venue 8 Pro and the Asus T100. And when I tried the trial versions of the full Office, I thought they ran okay. I didn't try a 100-page document on it, but I tried some 10- and 12-page documents, and I didn't see any slowdowns. So my recommendation is, if you really need some serious, you know, word processing or spreadsheet or whatever, you probably do want to pay $70 or $100 a year and get the full thing, because, A, you're going to have to pay for that anyway to unlock a few features in Office Mobile versions, and B, once you do, you know, you've already paid for the full thing, just install it and use it. Don't bother with Office Mobile.
On the other hand, if you're sitting in the back of an airplane seat and you're just kind of reviewing that presentation you're about to give, that's a heck of a lot easier to do on a 10-inch tablet if you're using the PowerPoint Modern than it is trying to do it in PowerPoint, the desktop version.
Oh, but to that I would say, but if I can't change a problem I see in the airplane, why bother?
But I think you can, you know, in a lot of cases. I mean, that's what we were talking about way back in the Windows Mobile days, that we really like to get fidelity and don't screw up when you put it back.
Again, if I take my Asus on the plane with me and I'm looking at a PowerPoint slide, I can't change it because I can't edit.
Well, you don't have a 365, you know.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. You know, but so I mean, you're going to pay for it anyway.
If you're doing that sort of stuff with Office products, you probably have a copy of Office 365.
Exactly, and that's what I'm saying. You know,
and so for those
times, run fine.
Those times when you're mobile, those mobile apps are useful because you may not have that opportunity. It's like trying to use Office on a Windows 7 tablet. You know, it was horrible. So you get
that, I will agree.
You get a little bit easier time for just you know, browsing through it, checking it, and if you have Office 365, you can see that spelling mistake and you can fix it and you can go on.
But you know, those little netbooks that we were buying in droves, five, six, 7 years ago, those Atom processors were pigs. And today's Atom processors, you know, whatever they're called, I can't even remember, Bay Trail or whatever, they're pretty darn good.
I'm not talking about performance. I'm just talking about the ability to do it with your fingers.
Because it's more touch-friendly?
Yeah.
That was the other comment I had in my article, is I didn't think they were all that touch-friendly. There was some stuff on the right upper side of the ribbon bar that were really tiny.
Yeah, but it's better than trying to run Office on a 9-inch screen.
I don't know. That's debatable, but yeah. Okay, I'll agree, but you know, and I do. I should note that if I were doing that, I would probably still have a keyboard and a stylus. I do carry a, you know, cheapo capacitive stylus for all my Windows tablets because they're so hard to use and, you know, to touch sometimes. Mostly the small ones.
But you need to get your Surface. That's got a real stylus.
That's true. You know, that's true. Well, I'm waiting to see what's coming out in the Windows 10 realm. You know, that. For one thing, I'd like to get something that supports Windows Hello, which does the face recognition and iris scan and stuff. So I really don't want to buy any hardware now until I see how much these things are going to cost. You know, I was kind of hoping my Dell notebook had that Intel RealSense that allowed me to use my Windows Hello. Unfortunately, although it looks like it does, apparently it actually doesn't. So I'm out of luck. I can't test it.
You know, there's one thing. I personally, I may be different, but you know, I really like look of the Windows, the Office Mobile applications. Mm-hmm. And, you know, honestly, it's cleaner. It doesn't have the big ribbon, the wide 1-inch long ribbon at the top of the screen. It's just got a small little bar for things you use the most, like bold and italic and so forth. And, you know, what I'm curious see is if anybody would take a feature by feature comparison of what you can do in like Word Mobile and go back to what is the version of the desktop. Is it, was it Word 97? Was it Word 95? Mm-hmm. You know, where is it feature complete to the old desktop versions? Because, you know, at some point in time, it really is the same amount of features, and back then we were happy. And you go back to the fact that I think for a lot of people, they don't use probably 60% of the features that are in like Word, full desktop Word.
So to that, and that's an interesting point, and it's a good point. And to that, I would say my opinion of it, I was thinking about it just the other day, is that Microsoft Office products, going all the way back to, you know, let's say 95 or 97, were amazingly powerful. And for those of us who needed to do things like index documents and create a table of contents and insert figures and tables and stuff, it was and is quite amazing, quite a piece of work in a positive sense. And this Office Mobile doesn't do a lot of that stuff. Up to including review. Now, you know, the vast majority of people, honestly, I don't think don't need to use that, right? Most people, when they're writing something, they're writing all by themselves. They don't need to have somebody review it. They're just, you know, doing whatever they need to do. I would say 90% of people, you know, a letter complaining to their water supply or whatever the case might be. But for the, you know, the, I don't know, let's say 10 to 25% of us who need to work in group environments, those features are really important, especially if you do large documents. Now, that said, comparing it, I would say I would compare Office Mobile today more to Microsoft Works, if you remember that.
Yeah.
And I thought Microsoft Works was quite a great package for, I think it was like 100-something bucks, and you got a spreadsheet and word processor and some other stuff that was perfectly usable for, you know, 75% of the people that didn't need to pay hundreds of dollars for Microsoft Office.
So, Todd, it sounds like what really hearing you say, what Microsoft ought to do is to separate the Office Mobile apps from Office 365 and sell it as a standalone software product.
I think
that you could buy through the iTunes Store and the Google Play Store as a software product and be done with it.
Yeah, which is, you know, until recently how Apple did it with their own pages and sheets and all of that, right? You could buy them for $10 a pop initially. And if I could, you know, if I could buy Word for $10, and I mean buy, not subscribe, if I could pay $10 for, you know, Word Mobile and $10 for Excel Mobile and $10 for PowerPoint, so $30, I would pay $30 for, you know, with all the features that they had, not all the Office features, but all the features that they provide, their viewing and that sort of thing, the pivot table, that'd be worth $30. Or $50 as, you know, as a package, but something less than what I would have to pay for the full Office 365, which I don't have, and because I don't need at home. I use LibreOffice when I need an Office package at home these days.
Yeah. Yep. Problem solved.
Yeah. So in any case, that was my gripe about Office Mobile, I've been using off and on an iPad. And it has the same limitations. You know, I also don't have review mode there, but I can look at things, or, you know, even just Goodreader if I want to annotate and you know, comment and send something back to somebody where I don't have to actually edit. But anyhow, this has been a long one with only two items on the list. But I want to thank you guys for joining me on podcast 125. And basically, we just spent the whole, however long we've been on here, what is it, like an hour, on Windows 10, which launched earlier this week on July 29th, just 2 days ago, and Office Mobile. I think I didn't ask you guys if you liked it. I like it. Well, how do you guys feel?
I like it. Off? I mean, I think it's nice. I find it easy to use with touch, and that's what I'd use it for. I'd use it on the Venue Pro, and if I've got the 11 detached, I've also got a Asus Note 8.
Yeah,
which
having been suffering with Windows 8 and 8.1 for a while, I really like Office 10 now that all the bugs are gone. And, you know, I should note that, yes, folks who are listening, yes, I did complain mightily at ExtremeTech.com about all the bugginess just a month before launch, but they were, like I said, you know, early in the quad test, they really did a good job of cleaning stuff up, and it's, so far, it's usable. And a couple of glitches, like my device limits thing. But, Frank, how do you like it on your Surface 3? You pretty happy with it?
Oh yeah, I think it's definitely a good improvement on the user interface. There's some features. I think they've still got some things to work out, but the real proof in the pudding is going to see how they evolve this, and how the software updates come out down the road, what impact they have as far as stability of the operating system, and how quickly they get those out that actually add additional features or complete the features of Windows 10. And then, if they bring in Windows 10 Mobile in, which I know Sven is really anxious to see make it work as they're describing it, it could be a very compelling combination of desktop, tablet, and phone.
Yeah, and I think, if I remember correctly, we can reasonably expect to see a somewhat major update to 10 later this year, like in October, November timeframe. So things that may seem odd or missing now may be fixed at that point. So anyhow, Mobile Views Podcast 125. I'm Todd Ogasawara with my good friends Frank McPherson and Sven Johansson. Hi. And I think my buddy John Westfall will be back on the podcast in the next week or two. But we're definitely going to check back in with Sven and Frank when they're available. And Jack Cook, too, couldn't make it tonight to join us. And a couple other friends, too, I think we'll bring in from time to time to get their perspectives on things. That's a wrap.